podcast listeners, we are united. K-Win and Big Ben, the Pac-12 players, wrote a long list of demands, suggestions about COVID guidelines, eligibility, economic impacts, and more. Social injustice as well. We are united. Listen to their stance. Listen to the feedback. Listen to what is going to happen.
I'm with you. I'm going to give you the data and the context you need to know. Listen in. WST Podcast, Big Ben and K-Win. We are United Pac-12. I spent all day thinking about this.
And can you tell our fans what you're thinking about? Why can't you sleep at night? Why did you do a new dissertation when you're 15 removes from the Washington State Broadcasting School of Excellence?
It's the Edward R. Murrow School of Communication, my friend. It's where a lot of great broadcasters have come from. And I also minored in Spanish, so if we want to start there. No, the reason I lost sleep is there's a We Are United that was formed after a lot of the Pac-12 schools saw inefficiencies in how the schools were addressing COVID, mainly around college football. And that has since evolved into the opportunity for them to use their platform as athletes to come up with, unfortunately, they use the word demands. In a sense, and we can get into this further, I'd like to use the exact nomenclature language that they used in their letter, but allow them to further, protect themselves as players and student athletes in the future. I don't know if you had the opportunity to read it or what your take is on it is, K-1.
Saw a brief headline about a week ago, and I didn't really pay much attention to it. I've been so focused on the NBA and the bubble that that's where I've been putting all my attention to. And then we texted yesterday, and you're like, I really want to do this. So I looked into it last night, and I looked into it this morning, and wow, like it's more thorough and expansive than I thought. And I want to applaud the college athletes for raising their voice and speaking their concerns.
Absolutely. Two faults that I find in this entire We Are United is two things. One, they use the word demands. And that's unfortunate because demands are threatening. Yeah. They tell the people that put in place the rules and regulations of being a student athlete, you're wrong. And that's unfortunate because it took away from a lot of the good that was actually in the letter around the We Are United. Now, these are 400 some football players that we've been told are on text threads and exchanging ideas on how to progress the sport and how to enable themselves to come out the other side after having been an athlete in a revenue producing situation in a better environment or a better opportunity to progress as a non-athlete in the future. So I think that's unfortunately they use the word demands. And I say that because
just so we're clear, there's a representative from each school that met with the Pac-12 AD or commissioner and then some other ADs to go over this letter and their so-called demands.
Who knows? The Pac-12, along with Larry Scott, because they mentioned him as part of the demands in reducing his salary. So they've been somewhat behind the scenes on what's actually taken place around the letter and the overall demands. But you have to think these players, with the exchange of ideas, the putting together the We Are United, came up with some ideas, and there's been some conversations that have taken place at that level with the students. There's one particular individual that has come in and is probably the most progressive. I think he's a Cal athlete or former athlete that has represented the students and their voice, or student athletes and Pac-12 football players in this case, and their voice to be the ombudsman or the translator or the whatever you want to call it in this case, to make sure that what they put in this letter had context and understanding. And I think that's the second issue of this letter is, as I read through it, as I thought about it, is they didn't provide any data or context into why they were making their demands.
Yeah.
And so from this episode, I hope, now granted, I don't want to become some just talking head, but I've taken the last probably 12 hours the day, not only think about it, but put it on paper and try to understand it. And the reason I'm so riled up about it is you have people like yourself, myself, podcasters, amateur podcasters, but you also have people within the media, those that maybe weren't college athletes making comments. One in particular that really got me was, you listen to sports radio, I imagine.
Yep.
There's local sports radio here, 950 and 710. One of the comments from a particular person on 950 really got me because, one, the guy had never played sports in his life. Two, he didn't attend a four-year university. And three, I think subconsciously what happens in the media, and especially listening to people like Stuart Mandel, who we had on the show, subconsciously they say, without college football, my job may be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
My company that I work for may be in jeopardy. So when they come out with comments, and specific to the letter that was put out by the We Are United conglomeration of athletes or football athletes in the Pac-12, when they make the comment of just give them a stipend of $1,000 more and tell them to shut up and go play, that is so short-sighted and narrow-minded, and not the point of what I think these players were trying to get out into the media and make people realize.
Yeah. Like, what really opened my eyes is there's a lot going on right now in the world with like social unrest, politics, and change. People want change. And if you look at the professional sports, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, they have a union to represent mm-hmm. their best interests in this global pandemic. College athletes don't have that. They have to rely on the commissioner and the NCAA to make decisions. And you know how they're driven? Money.
Money.
They don't care if these players get hurt, lose eligibility, opt out. They just want them to play football so that they can line their pockets with money. So again, I applaud these athletes for standing up, stepping up with no representation as, what, 18 to 22-year-olds and speaking their mind?
That's a good segue, because let's put some context around you and I and why we're making comments about this. We're in similar professions. You and I are both in tech sales. Now we are amateur podcasters.
Yeah.
What do we expect out of our profession? We expect healthcare. We expect dental. We expect vision. We expect somewhat fair compensation when we do make sales of commission dollars. We expect a healthy base, because there are things that we have to do operationally to just make sure the company continues in an operational manner in which they should. There's also opportunity for stock. Yeah. So if you perform well, you're given stock. And that's the one thing, unfortunately, as I read through this, that I don't believe, and from what I've heard, a lot of the students understand. And I mainly say that because one of their demands, unfortunately, I'm going to use that word because it's the word they used in the letter, was, I want 50% of the revenue that comes from my sport directly. And that's through the turnstile. That's through the TV revenue. That could be from bonuses from going to bowl games. And so, unfortunately, when they say that, that overshadowed, you know, the demand of, I want 50%. That overshadowed everything else within the letter. And that's what people focused on. Now, I have some ideas on how I believe we could steer the letter in the right direction and make progress towards their overall goals, what I believe their goals are after looking through this. It's, you're right, they've taken the opportunity of COVID, where we're asking them to go out in an uncertain time with an uncertain outcome of how COVID could affect them, but yet just get on the field to appease.
Just get out there and hike the ball.
And make that money, right? It's almost along the lines of what was told of LeBron once, shut up and dribble.
Yeah. Well, and also, again, I love what these kids are doing. But their one mistake, and I only can say this because I'm a little bit older, is like, when you're in negotiation, you don't throw everything out there on the table. You lead with one or two other things. And then when you get closer to that, you're like, well, but then one more, but then yep. one more. And what's going to get lost is there's economic, there's social, there's all sports, and then there's COVID safety. Mm-hmm. And so John Wilner had an article the other day. Basically, the Pac-12 kind of pushed all that other stuff aside, and they're like, let's just talk about COVID, because they want to close this and get them on the field.
Exactly. You're exactly right. But I'm sure, and what's unfortunate maybe is they think the leverage is going to shift back to the NCAA. And what I hope out of the students is they can somewhat correct some of their asks. So they're not demands, but yet they look like, hey, NCAA, or even Pac-12 for this matter, it's your idea. And this is what we should do, right? And this is going to help us monetarily. It's going to, you know, enable more athletes to come to your school. It's going to maintain the not just physical health of the athletes long term, but also the mental health and provide them with resources. Sales.
You got to make it look like the customer comes up with the idea. Exactly. Even though it's your idea. And you have to show the benefits for the other party, like NCAA. This is what's going to benefit you. And then, exactly. Oh, by the way, we get all this other stuff.
But I want to get back to the data real quick, because this is what people don't realize. They think that these, in this particular case, these football players, like it's a, you know, there's a ton of football players on campus and they're trying to take advantage. It's not the case.
No,
that is absolutely not the case. And let me just get the data for you real quick. So there's, I believe, 85 scholarships, full ride scholarships given to any one school that they're able to allocate in the Pac-12. So that amounts to about 1,020 students on a full ride scholarship. The total enrollment for the Pac-12, KWIN, across all the schools is 465,000.
Wow.
So we're talking about 0.002% of the students attending these schools who are college football athletes, yet producing an extravagant amount of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
For the school, through the turnstiles, so for them, it's not short-sighted or narrow-minded on their part, because they look at it and go, I'm funding a lot of stuff going on within the school.
I'm the VC for this operation.
Exactly. And so they made the comment. So they made the comment about, this is the most revenue, or this is the peak of their time. And I agree with them, because they've trained, just like you and I are sales professionals. They've trained. What do? We study product. We study the competition. We get our pitch down. We make sure we're, you know, cordial with customers. We, you know, do background. They do the same thing, but it's just different training. And they're saying, I train, I sacrifice, it's a job. You know, if we had an athlete, Jed Collins, Michael Bumpus, if we had them on there, they'd say it's 6 to 7 to 8 hours. Khalif Barnes, professional, he said it'd be 10-hour days. And it's all spent studying their trait. And it's a little different on the college scale, but it's still, you know, in the same realm. But yet,
well, I mean, I would say this, you played a little football, I played a little baseball. And so the challenge with college athletics and academics is you have to balance both. In the NFL, that's all you have. So in college, you're going to school, you're studying, and then you're spending all this time, you're sacrificing your livelihood for people to make money off your name, image, and likeliness.
Not just your name, image, and likeliness. It's you as a team. And what I do agree with is, when they went through and made these demands, is they not only noted just, you know, they didn't note the top NFL players or players that may go to the NFL, but they named walk-ons, right? Because I think they understand
everyone.
Exactly. The sacrifice that you make in order to contribute to the team, in order to contribute to that top line revenue or that net revenue that these universities make from you being on the field, astronomical in the way of what I don't believe people that haven't played a sport within either the media or just fans understand.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you imagine you or I saying, we're going to do podcasting for 8 hours a day. Right. That's how, and we're not going to get paid for it, but yet we're going to get provided our laptop, our mic, our everything we need, editors, whatever we may need. But then we got to go to school on top of it to learn something else, knowing that in 4 to 5 years, podcasting is going to dry up and we're going to be expected to go out and do something else within society. And I think that's the point a lot of people miss in all of this. They don't realize the sacrifice that these kids are making. Right. And I think a lot of the demands are just, but again, the context and data behind it, people don't understand.
They don't. And I think this all ties into COVID, what's going on right now. And to go back to your other point, there's an example A and a B. An example A is, there are some players that are using this platform and this opportunity to play college sports to further themselves and get to the NFL. Right. So if I'm a star player, I go out there, I get sick, I can't play, I can't produce. That ruins my draft status, my stock. And then for the walk-on, they're just playing, they're having fun. But what if they get sick and they impact their parents or someone else? And there's one football player that says, we don't know the long-term effects of this. So what happens after I'm done? Am I going to be supported medically and financially and like all that stuff?
Exactly. And it's a good segue. I do want to mention, you're exactly right. You are exactly right in that they're taking this time of COVID, of uncertainty, saying, look at the NFL. We even have professionals opting out. We have, you know, first round draft picks that are coming out at schools like Virginia Tech and saying, I'm done. I'm not going to risk it. I don't know, to your point, I don't know the long-term effects. Is it respiratory? Can I pass it on? And so forth. So yeah, for a lot of kids, there's uncertainty. So they're leveraging that and saying, if you want us on the field, not only do we want this, and I think it's an opportune time for them to do this.
Yeah.
And we want to make these other asks or demands in their own words. So
I was going to say, if you look at Major League Baseball versus the NBA, Major League Baseball, they're traveling. The tests don't come back on time. When do they get the tests? What are the people? That is the same exact thing that would happen to college football. And so their COVID ask is, we want robust testing. We want access to testing. We want results. We want safety procedures. If you look back to UCLA, the players turned against Chip Kelly and the season hasn't even started.
Exactly. There's cases in Colorado State where players are fearful of reporting their COVID because they don't want to be quarantined and thus not on the field. And that's the psychological game that these guys are trying to get out of. They want to make sure there's a third party there that's not just after that money that you mentioned, but after the welfare and well-being of these student athletes. And that's what they're predominantly getting at. Now, they're just using that platform to basically ask for other things, which, let me break this down. And I think this is the big thing that the media, and I'll break it down with data, okay, Wynn?
I love it.
You love. But I think this is the big thing that the media hones in on, is they say this demand of 50% of the revenue that's generated by their sport should come back to the student athlete. Now, again, we talked about that there's differences within any business. And then they're talking about from a business sense. It's not 50% of the revenue. It should be 50% of the net revenue, meaning they don't realize that there's trainers, coaches, facilities, everything that goes into putting the product on the field, their uniforms and so forth. So let me just give you an example here. So net revenue, meaning after I draw down everything on a balance sheet that goes into actually putting people on the field, how much from TV, turnstile, how much did I actually take home? Bottom line revenue. And I can't note this on what year this is, but that this actually comes from Next College Student Athlete, athleticscholarships.net, noted that UW netted $38 million in revenue in a single year. And let me break this down. So let's say that if we assume that football brings in 70%, which I think is a decent number, and it would mean that approximately 85 to 100, including walk-ons, would want to take home 50% of just the net revenue. So that would mean roughly $13.3 million overall, or $133,000 a player per year. Now, you would say that's astronomical. And most would say that it's astronomical because the household median household income in this country is roughly half that. Mm-hmm. So these kids playing a sport that they love, that we're playing, you know, that we're paying for the room, their board, their tuition, all their operational costs to put them on the field, you would say that's way too much. But in actuality, I think they're right, Kaywin. This is the peak in terms of their athletic career, potentially for most. There's only 1% of these kids that go on to the NFL.
So I can tell you today, I went out for a run. It wasn't pretty. I'm way past my prime.
Exactly. You're exactly right. So why not do something that benefits the student athlete after they've completed this? They could unionize and all this, some things that you discussed and demand this. But I think there's a longer term solution to this, which honestly was brought up, and this is, I'm not going to claim it's my idea, but just through reading this, I tried to understand what the students were getting at, student athletes, the people part of her that football players, part of you, We Are United, were getting at. I think ultimately it's, we want to be taken care of after we're done playing football.
Financially and medically as well. They want health benefits, which they should fight for that.
And here's the thing. You've heard of an endowment.
Yep.
And it was mentioned in their demands that, you know, sports shouldn't go away. Specifically, they mentioned the Stanford sports that went away. Now, the thing about endowments is, if I give to an endowment, you and I are billionaires. We came from the computer science division of Berkeley. I'm going to go back and give back to that computer science division so that I enable more people to come out of that school and maybe work for my company, or that it continues to foster success. Now, Stanford's endowment is $27 billion, Caitlin. And what these kids don't realize is they were up in arms about them defuncting a lot of these specific sports, like synchronized swimming, men's volleyball, fencing. Now, Stanford probably said, listen, there's no contribution to the school in and around these. We basically had them in order for kids to participate in sports because we believe it's valuable. What I could see benefiting this is you have an endowment in which people contribute to, and it's basically a pool of money in which it's discretionary based on who gives, right? I'm not going to give my money and say, hey, you go spend it how you like. I want to have some input. I believe if they created an athletic endowment, meaning these
by athletes, school or by conference,
by school, by conference, however you want it regulated, it may be beneficial for them to do it by conference, because the larger the pool of money, again, it's an investment, and you would have someone overseeing this investment and investing it wisely so that the returns, your endowment continues to grow. If I gave you $100 and said, hey, it's going to 10% return year over year, or $1,000 compounding 10% year over year, you would take the $1,000, right?
Yeah.
So in this case, it might be beneficial for the Pac-12 to do something like that, combined pool. But what this would allow them to do is effectively oversee this revenue that they're producing and contribute to things like medical benefits that they want post, right? So saying, okay, 6 years, that's going to come out of this endowment. We're going to be able to guarantee this. We're going to effectively be able to fund this so that if you graduate with a 4-year degree from this university and you contributed on field to somewhat of athletics, you are quote unquote vested into 6 years of medical after the fact. This would protect him in that sense. What it would also do, okay, when, and this is where there's somewhat of gray area, but they called out the idea that there's Larry Scott's getting paid $5 million. Facilities are out of control.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, coaches are being paid $4 to $5 million a year in some cases. Average is about $3 million. But what we could do is find a mean across the entire university and allow athletes to contribute back to coaches' salaries, meaning, hey, this coach was great. I want to contribute to his salary in this way, but it's a discretionary fund where athletes can fund different areas in which they see fit. And I think that would allow most of these athletes, you know, if I didn't do the calculation on the overall net revenue that would come into this endowment, athletic endowment, but it would give them the opportunity to control some of that money that they're bringing in for the university.
So you're saying create a pool, an endowment, and the players don't necessarily, they can't tap into that for, they can't cash out individually for that endowment, but they can use it and allocate it to different resources. And some of it will go to fund like medical benefits that they would need after they graduated.
Listen, there's, for every Aaron Rodgers, for every successful guy that goes on the NFL, and you smile, but there's guys, I read an article, there's cases of players coming out, and they've talked about this as part of why we need to play football, is these kids are so regimented. They have a schedule. They get fed at the same day. They go to practice at the same day. When they get out in the real world, I wouldn't say rarely without understanding it, but I've witnessed where they get out in the real world, they don't understand what to do. They don't resume. There's no interview. So those are the resources for kids coming out of who have put so much into a program, specifically football in this case, but to have the resources and fund this so that they can get, you know, the resume written for them or get help. They can get the mental health resources that they need. If they need help locating a job, they have the network to do so, right? They're not just dismissed after the fact.
All out there on their own.
And when it comes to another thing, name, image, and likeliness, they ask for the representation. Well, if that representation came from that pool, meaning you funded it, and you used former athletes from the Pac-12, that would benefit all of them, right? And they have someone negotiating for them. It's not going out of this, ecosystem of athletes, but also benefiting them. And then it also helps them in the terms of you don't have 7,000 different athletes, but you also have central representation to represent the name, image, and likeliness, not just for football, because we've seen and we talked about there's softball players, there's women's basketball, there's gymnastics that all could all benefit from name, image, and likeliness. So net is, my idea is long-term, take the revenue that these athletes are producing. And of course, we can't dismiss things like Title IX, yeah. Right? But also spread that across, but create a pool in which the revenue that these athletes, student athletes are producing can benefit from in the future. Yeah. And that there's resources for them after the fact. Which
give them a 401k, like put it in a Fidelity account. Exactly. They get it when they're 65.
Yeah. I mean,
or retire early.
You made this money.
Yeah.
For the university, whether it's through, you know, whether you're the walk-on or you're Justin Fields, you contributed. That shouldn't be discounted. And which is why I think they also noted walk-ons. You know, they contribute as well. It's not just the star athlete that no one's going through the turnstile and saying, I'm here just to see Justin Fields. No, they're here to watch the team, right? And whoever contributes to making that team better should benefit.
I agree.
I have a note, deep breath here.
My number one gripe, if I can jump in, is if players opt out, as it stands right now, they're on scholarship, but they lose this year of eligibility, which I think is ridiculous. And it just goes to show you that the NCAA does not care about these players and they're trying to force them to play to make money.
Agree. Absolutely agree. And this is the issue. If I opt out, I want to retain that eligibility. I want to stay on scholarship, right? And this should be the case within any effect. You know, people that get injured, you know, 4 years into or four games into a season, they have to go for a waiver and hardship, and they have to make all these, not necessarily claims, but they have to go to a board of the NCAA and justify why they should gain another year of eligibility. In this case, COVID, if I opt out, I should retain eligibility and I should retain that scholarship. Exactly. 100%.
It's not one or the other. It's both. In fact, the four California schools, Stanford, Cal, USC, and UCLA, they went to the California Governor's Committee and they're asking for a mandate, a third party to say, like, if a player opts out, they will stay on scholarship and they will not lose eligibility. I hope that goes through not only for California, but for everyone in the Pac-12 and everyone worldwide. Yeah. You know, if you opt out, you shouldn't lose eligibility.
It would be a matter of we've more or less, not necessarily you and I are both customer facing. We go out. We've opted out of our jobs in terms of customer facing, yet we still have the way to facilitate what we do. Mm-hmm. These players, unfortunately, don't have a way to virtually play football. Yeah. So we have to have them on the field. If that is the case, make it safe for them. Make it so it's beneficial to them long term and listen to them. Because ultimately, it's not just these kids are putting themselves out there. They're risking themselves. Some would say, the data would say around COVID that, oh, anyone from 18 to 22, the likelihood of death is minuscule. And even if you're asymptomatic, herd theory and all this. That said, that's narrow-minded.
So I would say that's not the risk. Like I to all the pundits out, the risk is Keaton Slovis gets COVID. He can't play for 4 weeks until he gets two negative tests and he loses that year of eligibility.
Well, I would take it a step further. The thing about the reason we talk about the bubble working is these people aren't disposed to anyone outside. We've seen baseball. Even today, they had to postpone the Cubs and Cardinals because there's too many. The likelihood of that happening in NCAA football this year is astronomically
it's
larger.
It's going to happen. It's just when it's going to happen.
And here's the thing, Kaywin. These kids have, I mean, it's not like these kids have houses to go to in quarantine. No, they're going back to their parents or their dorm or wherever they have to go after the season. So the risk of exposure to those people that are already predisposed, which we know is the factor that leads to death in this, in the COVID case, is astronomically larger than, say, Major League Baseball player that can go into his home and quarantine and be okay. These kids would have nowhere to go in some cases. Maybe you have the dorms, but net is, I believe these demands, if taken as suggestions, to your point, and they were brought to Larry Scott, the university presidents, the athletic directors, in a way in which contextually made sense, which hopefully I tried and attempted to do during this podcast.
You did a great job.
I believe they would be listened to more effectively. And then secondarily, the data behind it, in which they say, I'm one of the most valuable people you have on campus, in the way of making sure that this university continues to draw revenue.
Someone brought up a great point. Do you think some kid is paying $70,000 to go to USC if there's no football?
Right.
Like, no.
No. Well, the impact, you bring up a good point.
Like, I'll go down to, like, University of Phoenix.
It doesn't make a difference, does it? It
doesn't make a difference. I'll save my parents some money.
Economic impact doesn't just hit, you know, the people that are covering it from a media standpoint. It doesn't hit the personnel, the trainers, people, you know, in and around the program. But think about the communities. You know, if these players don't play, although there may not be fans, you know, the communities like Pullman, like Corvallis, like these small towns who people rush there to go to home games. I guarantee you the guy that owns the Coug, dead set happy that, you know, he has that place and people come to Pullman to watch these kids play. So the economic impact isn't just to the university as a whole, but it's so much larger, which I think is why so many people have an opinion on We Are United.
Yeah. Should we wrap this up?
We should. All right. If you got any comments, concerns, if you think I'm wrong, that's fine. Send us an email, wsdpodcastshow@gmail.com, wsd_podcast at Twitter or Instagram. I may, Kaywin, send this to KJR just to see if we can get on and rouse this particular individual.
You should.
But we appreciate you listening.
You can find it everywhere. Podcast, Podbeam, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Download, listen, subscribe. Give us some feedback. Let us know what you think of Big Ben's takes.
88 Acres. Did you get your shipment?
I did. It was great.
Oh, salad dressings, pumpkin seed butters.
Ooh. Granola.
JD, thank you. WSD Podcast, Big Ben and Kaywin. We are United Pac-12.